Welcome to the IP 360 podcast, brought to you by IP Private Wealth. This podcast talks about wealth, health, and all the different ways we measure our success. It's a true 360-degree look at how we manage our wealth. Today, we talk again with Dr. Catherine Horvath, registered psychologist and founder and executive director of the Ottawa Center for Resilience. This is part two of our conversation on divorce and children. So let's go to the interview. We're back today with Dr. Catherine Horvath, founder and executive director of the Ottawa Center for Resilience. Thanks for joining us again.
Good morning.
We are following up part two of talking about divorcing when there are children in the family. Our first round, we talked about the experience of sharing or breaking the news with the family and the children, and some of that initial steps towards living separately. Do you have some guidance that we can get into today around the do's and don'ts for life post-divorce with children?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the overarching do that parents need is that they really need to commit that the decision to divorce was a grown-up decision, and that they're going to do everything in their power. And this is a joint commitment. So it's like, let's do everything in our power together to minimize the stress for our children. You are still the parental unit, and decisions about your children are to be made between the two of you. And so if, you know, if the school calls one parent to say, you know, your child got in trouble today or really concerned about something, the very next call you should be making is to the other parent.
Right.
It's like, we need to talk about our kids. Something's going on.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's, I mean, that's obviously the ideal situation. So, you know, one of the questions that comes to mind for me right away is, how do you handle it if you slip up, if you have a day where you're really maybe angry with the other party and, you know, your kids see something about, like they witness that anger on some level, or there's some sort of a slip up when you're trying to do that, you know, polite goodbye, hello at drop off and it doesn't quite go that way. How do you handle a slip up situation?
Yeah. So are you talking about a slip up like in front of the children kind of?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what you do is just like, I mean, I think we talked a little bit about this general idea last time, is that you don't have to be perfect. You're a human being, and humans screw things up all the time, and humans have emotions all the time, and that's fine. You know, these are kind of best practice principles that you're going to strive towards, and you're not always going to get them, and that's okay. And it's especially going to work best though if you can both kind of hold, what's the word, kind of like some space for each other, give each other a little leeway, like to kind of assume that you're both trying your best to strive to meet these as much as you can, but that, you know, you're human and you might have a bad day, and there are still raw feelings related to the divorce and things happen. And if you're the person who, you know, has quote unquote screwed up, then you would do the same thing you should do anytime you screw something up in relationship, is you do your best to fix it. So you repair, you apologize to the other parent if that's where the apology needs to be. And you can also explain, and you explain it to your kids in an age, you know, age appropriate way, depending on their ages. And you say like, hey, you know what? I was having a bad day. I got frustrated. I was feeling vulnerable, and I snapped at mom or dad yesterday, and I shouldn't have done that. And I really shouldn't have done that in front of you. I'm sorry. And I'm working hard to try not to do that. So, you know, just owning it and being honest and saying, I'm sorry, and I'm doing my best, and I'll try to do better next time.
So last time we talked about this idea that it's okay to have conflict with your spouse and have your children witness that to a certain extent. And so, you know, and in that case, I think we're specifically talking about, well, you're still a couple, that it's okay to see parents disagree and work through a conflict. But now that we're separate or separated or divorced, we're talking about a very, you know, a much more neutral approach to things. Is it still okay for there to be some disagreement? And I'm not talking about, you know, over how the finances get divided in the courtroom or something. I mean, like, things like which hockey team or league should we put Jim in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So all of that is normal. And I think the same principle applies, that conflict and exposure to conflict in and of itself is not harmful. What's harmful is when the conflict never gets resolved and is chronic. So seeing that your parents get stuck a little sometimes or have issues agreeing on things, but then they work it through, then that's the key. As long as they know, like, yeah, sometimes mom and dad don't get along, but eventually they sort it out, then that's okay. I mean, the kids know that mom and dad aren't going to agree on everything. I mean, they did get a divorce, right?
That's a good point. Now, what if one parent is trying to do, you know, the really healthy approach to this, and the other one is just kind of running amok? They're not being respectful in return. They're not following the same rules. You know, if there was discussion around, for example, matching up bedtimes, the other household isn't doing that, or even talking unkindly about the other ex.
Yeah, that's a common and really challenging, I think. So the short answer is, if you're the person who feels like you're working your best to follow all of these principles and, you know, involve the other parent and give them the benefit of the doubt and collaborate, and you're not getting that in kind, you shouldn't do anything different. Like you have to take the high road, which can be hard. It is hard, right? And I think what can help with that is keeping in mind, why are you doing this? It's not about your ex-partner, it's about your children. So if you can sort of separate it out from, well, he or she is being a whatever, a blah, 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 and it's pushing all my buttons and it's not fair and I'm working so much harder and they're not putting in it. Why should I honor this when they're not honoring that? And, you know, so on. It's like, but you're not doing it for them. You're doing it for your kids. You're doing it for your kids. So your kids have an example of a parent who's putting them first and doing their best in a hard situation. And the kids will see that one parent is trying that and one isn't. Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think ultimately, so my answer is that you got to hold the course. And so get whatever support you need to help yourself be able to do that, because it does get really frustrating to feel like you're always the one taking the high road and you're all alone up there. And, you know, I mean, it may mean at some point that you might have to get some support, whether through, you know, additional external support to address that through mediation or courts or whatnot. But you shouldn't be changing your behavior. So you might need to take other actions to address the other parent's behavior, but you should continue to behave in line with these principles.
Right, for sure. And so, like, on that topic, so let's just kind of assume that things are a little bit better off than that. But, you know, there's discussion around bedtimes, there's discussion around how much homework we do and sort of, you know, how we manage our day. How important is it in an ideal situation to try and have the two households have the same structure, schedule, rules?
So it's definitely helpful if the parents can share with each other the household expectations and rules they're using in their homes and make efforts to match them reasonably. It is also okay that there's some variation. So, because, you know, if you're going to feel like you both have to always agree exactly how to do things, that's going to be a major source of stress and it's not realistic. And so I think you have to say, like, maybe what are the big things that we feel like do need to be constant between the two homes, whether it's, you know, bedtime, amount of screen time, what activities the kids are doing, things like, you know, like, where do we feel like we need to kind of sync and then allow for some, like, let some of the rest of it go, mm-hmm. basically, right? Like, because you also want to feel like you have the leeway to just parent in freedom in some sense, like to not feel like you are being evaluated and have to hold to some rigid set of rules that you can, you know, if you want to put your kids to bed a little bit later one night or give them a cupcake in their lunch, like that you're not going to be, you know, berated for doing that. Like,
yeah, and that, back in and the that, mediator's office.
Exactly. Like, and that's, it kind of really all comes back to giving each other the benefit of the doubt. And that also applies to when the kids tell you things that are happening in either home. And just to remember that it's not that your kids are intentionally lying, but kids can say all kinds of things for all kinds of reasons. So not necessarily, not reacting right away when your kid says, oh, mommy, like, gave me chips and pop for my school lunch yesterday. And instead, you know, giving the other parent the benefit of the doubt, pausing and checking with the other parent before reacting and making an assumption, and not letting things get polarized by the kids saying stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. From my own experience with friends, one of the things that I found really surprising was how incredibly young a child can be and still start to catch on to some of these ways to take advantage of a situation, you know, using certain phrases that they know will pull on heartstrings or make one parent feel bad or have like sort of a guilt moment, or even a jealousy moment. You know, am I correct in that read that, you know, even a very young child learns pretty quickly how to adapt to the situation and find ways to make it work to their advantage?
Well, I mean, we're all wired for survival. So yeah, kids are going to do whatever they think help is in their interest to help them survive. And I mean, even in intact families with, you know, good marriages, if you're not careful, it's really easy for alignments to happen between parents and kids, where you can see kids can be really polarizing, right? They can be like, they'll pick up on like, oh, it really annoys mom whenever dad does that, like whenever dad's on his phone and doesn't respond when she tells him it's dinner time. Mm-hmm. And they start then they'll start complaining about then like, dad, you're always on your phone and da 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 da. And then, you know, as that parent who's annoyed with that, it's really easy to be like, oh, to kind of feel validated and good, like, oh, see, we all see it. We're all annoyed with you about this. But the healthy, mature parental decision is to not do that, like to basically to keep your frustrations and issues with your partner away from your children, to allow your children to have a relationship with them on their own terms that isn't influenced by your issues with them. If that makes sense. So what I'm saying is, to in answer to your question, is like, yeah, kids will find, like, kids find the tensions and the cracks and they play them, and whether families are intact or not, but when they're not intact, the playing field becomes much bigger.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, we've all had times in our own childhood where we asked dad for something and he said no, and then we went and tested mom, and depending on the day, that could go very well for you or very badly.
Yeah.
So now there's more gap between when you see one or the other and, you know, playing one off the other or asking questions of one or the other.
Exactly. And if you know they don't talk to each other or they're not actually going to go check with the other one, then like, yeah, things can happen.
Yeah. So talking about differences between households, sometimes when a couple splits, you know, depending on the situation, there might be a real difference in post-divorce revenue income for mm-hmm. each individual household. And so I've seen where people have, you know, like say, let's say the original family home stays with spouse A, and it's, you know, a big home with a pool and all sorts of goodies. And the place that spouse B moves into is more modest. Maybe they're on a more fixed budget, at least through mm-hmm. the divorce proceedings. And maybe kids even have to share a room, for example. They're not used to that. How can parents kind of manage that experience, and how, you know, realistically, children sometimes will have a negative reaction to that change?
Yeah. So I think for the parent who may be the one on the more fixed income, and so that represents a change in lifestyle for the children, it's just to be, I think, factual and honest, and to say, you know what, like, this is what we can afford at this time. This is the best we can do. And I get that it's a big change and it's frustrating, and you miss some of the things that you used to have when you were at the other parent's home. So not, you know, I think being honest about it, acknowledging it, like not trying to say, like not getting frustrated with the children or saying that they shouldn't be annoyed about it, like acknowledging and understanding that they're feeling maybe disappointed or upset or frustrated about this change isn't the same as like it, you don't have to feel bad about it. Like the fact is it's a change and it's a hard change. And that's all you really need to do is be like, yeah, it's a big change. And some of the things about it really suck. I get that. And that's really all kids need. They just need to know that you get it and you're okay with how they feel about it and they'll move on.
Yeah. And with that kind of change where, you know, I've moved into a 2-bedroom apartment, we're trying to make that work. You know, we don't have the same pizza money we used to, et cetera. Is it healthy to, for example, try and find ways to offset that? Try and say, okay, well, we don't have this kind of fun anymore, but now we do these kinds of outings and it's something new and different. Or is there a line there that is very easy to cross where you start to go into overcompensating?
Yeah. So I think there's nothing wrong with reframing it and saying like, you know, we can't necessarily do some of the things we did before that maybe involved, had more of a price tag attached, but I'm still here. I'm still here to be your parent and I'm still going to set aside time for us to do things together. And let's think about things that we could do together that we'd enjoy, that maybe, you know, that aren't, you know, that are within our budget. I don't think you need to, you don't want to overcompensate. You don't need to be like, oh, but now we can do, you know, whereas before you might spend this amount of time with the child doing something special. Now suddenly be like, well, I'm going to do something special with you every day. Right. Like, so you don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm. How do parents successfully cope with like when their kids come back from the other parent and they've got a story about how they went to Wonderland and it was awesome, or they had a 3-day sleepover with their best friend. You know, there's going to be a natural sense of, well, I don't want to be the unfun parent, so I'm going to try and meet or up the ante. How does a parent cope with that in a way that's healthy?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, certainly you can start to feel a little uncomfortable or inadequate if you feel like it in one home, they're getting really cool trips and experience, you know, access to experiences that you're not able to give them. I think you just need to remember, like, that's cool, but it really doesn't, it's not really at the heart of what matters to kids. What matters to kids is that they have both their parents in their lives and they love them and they're there for them and they're happy for them. And I think, you know, you have to kind of deal with your own feelings and then be happy for your kids. Like, how cool is that for your kids that they got to go to Disneyland? Like that sounds like an amazing experience. Like that you can be supportive of that and interested and want to hear about it. Like, tell me about it. And what did you love about it? And wow, that sounds so amazing. And, that you're not losing your kids by doing that and they're not getting closer to the other parent by doing that. You're showing them that there's enough room that you're okay with them having all of you in their lives in whatever way that looks like.
Mm-hmm. We have to wrap up. Is there any last points you want to make today around the idea of life post-divorce, do's and don'ts?
I guess maybe just to say succinctly, I think this is kind of summing up a few of the last things we just talked about. So I think kind of a little mantra you can keep in your mind for yourself is a lot of what this comes down to is don't talk badly about the other parent to the child or around the child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense for sure. Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Dr. Catherine Horvath, for joining us. And your center is the Ottawa Center for Resilience. Where can people find out more?
They can go to our website, which is ocfr.ca.
Excellent. Thanks again.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the IP360 podcast. We look forward to talking with Dr. Catherine Horvath again about blended families. If you'd like to reach out to us here, you can email us at comms@ipprivatewealth.com. That's COMMS. Or head to ipprivatewealth.com for more information on the IP360 philosophy to wealth management. We'll see you next time. And now for the fine print. The guidance provided herein is for general information purposes only and is not intended to serve as advice for one's specific situation. Viewers are encouraged to contact IP Financial Planning, Inc. for a private consultation.